Welcome to this week's edition of Local Motion. I'm Kate Redmond. Today we'll be looking into the issue of COVID long haulers. I will be speaking with two Colorado women who are enduring months of COVID symptoms, long after first being diagnosed. They are among an estimated 5 million patients worldwide. It is still an unfolding medical phenomena, and by its very nature of long-term infirmity, makes prospective longitudinal studies challenging. A citizens group known as the Patient-Led Research for COVID-19 was formed to survey a large group in the United States, Canada, and the UK and publish their findings. The team has met with staff from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization. Their work also has been mentioned in magazine articles and even cited in some papers published in scientific journals. My first interview is with Maggie Glass, who lives in the metro area and is a consultant for special event venues. Maggie, how long have you had COVID symptoms?
I have been sick since March 25th, 2020, so a little over a year.
In one survey that I read, long haulers, so-called long haulers, have reported 98 different symptoms. What have your symptoms been?
My symptoms have been fever is probably the main one, migraines, body aches and pains. I've had tinnitus. I've had a lot of stomach issues the second half of the year. Those are pretty much the main ones, the fever and the headaches. Oh, fatigue. I've never dealt with chronic fatigue before, and it's epic. So like, I'm tired all the time.
Does anything make it better?
My doctor's been pretty great. She's prescribed a lot of medications that have helped. I'm on a beta blocker for the temperature. It's helping because we figured out my temperature is neurological. I'm on a bunch of different medications for the migraines. She added an antidepressant for the fatigue. I would say that I'm maybe 40% better than I was. And at this point, I just kind of try to push through not feeling well, because I can be not feeling well in bed laying down, or I can be not feeling well coming downstairs and having dinner with my family.
So this must really affect your family.
It definitely has. I'm really lucky. Garrett and my kids have been great, but it's also kind of sad. My youngest will come in my room in the morning and say, is it going to be a good day or a bad day?
Have you had doctors dismiss that these symptoms are related to COVID?
At the beginning, no one thought I had it. Right away when I got the fever, kind of felt like the flu. I immediately reached out to my doctor and they said it couldn't be COVID because I wasn't short of breath. I didn't have a cough. And I hadn't been to China. So they wouldn't acknowledge it and they wouldn't test me. And it just went on and on at the beginning. You know, I wrote my doctor after a week and said, well, I've had a fever for a week. Oh, that's normal. That can happen. I've had a fever for 2 weeks. I've had a fever for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And finally, I got tested for COVID in May and the test came back negative because I probably didn't have enough left in there to show positive. I mean, I'd been sick at that time for almost 3 months. So like, you know, 8 weeks, test isn't going to show positive. Not until articles and stuff started to come out and I would send them to my doctor. So maybe late summer is when she acknowledged that I had post-viral syndrome, most likely due to COVID. But not having that positive test has affected a lot of my ability to get care.
In terms of your medical insurance?
More in terms of clinics. They've got long hauler clinics now where they are taking care of the whole you versus just the symptom of a headache or the symptom of a fever. And I don't qualify because I don't have a positive test. So they won't admit me to those groups. And, you know, my doctor's doing the best she can do and the specialist the same, but they're not looking at COVID or long COVID symptoms. They're not seeing only those patients. They're seeing all the regular patients. I've become a mini doctor after this whole thing, the amount I read and learn and study.
Do they believe that even though you aren't testing positive, that it's possible that you have been contagious this whole year?
Everything that I have read and my doctor has explained to me is that I have shed the virus. So basically, I went into kind of an immune response where my body, instead of fighting a virus that's long gone, it is fighting itself. So it's inflammation.
And you're part of a long hauler Facebook group. What have you learned from your peers?
That thing saved me. to see that other people were having the exact same symptoms I had, and nobody had a doctor telling them that it was COVID. My first post in the group, I wrote, I've just gotten a COVID test and I'm so afraid it's going to be negative because then no one will believe me. And someone replied, we believe you.
And they're probably doing the same amount of research for themselves that you're doing.
Yes. And there's lots of doctors and nurses. They were kind of the first people who got sick because they were taking care of those ill. So like, for example, a neurologist who's also a long hauler was the one who said to me, ask your doctor about beta blockers for your fever because you're describing it as neurological and those might be able to help.
Symptoms are often described as relapsing and remitting in nature. Does this describe your experience?
For a long time, I never felt like I had a relapse because I was just always sick. Then when I started to try to push through them, I'd say in January this year, if I did something that was too strenuous, if I had a beer, then the symptoms would come back and then I would pay for it, you know, like 2 or 3 days of being stuck in bed.
Have you been vaccinated?
I have. I'm really excited about it. And I actually had my second vaccine this past Saturday, so 2 days ago.
Some things that I read about long haulers is that the vaccine actually helped their symptoms.
Yeah, I've read that too. And that's why I'm so excited about it, because from what I've read, up to 25%, I mean, it's all anecdotal, but like 25% of people are feeling better. I'm like, I can be one of the four. I can be part of that 25%.
And what did your doctor say about the vaccine and your symptoms?
She's a Western medicine doctor. So she's very much, she wants facts. She wants studies. She was glad I was getting it and hopeful that something would turn out from it. And definitely, you know, not saying don't get it. We haven't talked since I got it on the second one on Saturday, but I have another appointment this week. I have an appointment every week with her.
So this must give you a unique perspective on the COVID deniers and people who refuse to wear masks. With you living with it on the daily, this probably brings that to the forefront for you.
The first time it really bothered me was when our former president said that he had COVID and it was no big deal and he could get over it. When I saw that, I honestly just broke down. It just killed me that I can't imagine anyone I love or even anyone I don't love dealing with these symptoms. It's been hard. I've had family that's kind of questioned if it's real. I've had friends who think the numbers of people that have died are fake. You know, I'm a pretty rational person. I don't really believe in, you know, pushing your agenda on others. But this thing has really hit me, obviously, very personally. I've kind of freaked out when people say that. I've cried. I've yelled at them. My grandmother just sent me this article saying it's no big deal and maybe you don't need the vaccine. And I'm like, Grandma, put your mask on and get your vaccine for God's sake. Please don't get any of these symptoms. It's been difficult. And I think the solution to that is just talking about it. You know, the more we talk about our experiences and communicate how the benefits, that helps people understand. But sometimes it's really heartbreaking. You know, you'll see someone who, you know, went to spring break and partying hardy and having a great time and they never get sick. And it's like, well, why do they get to be okay? And I have to suffer, you know? I think we're in the last wave of this stuff. I think as people get vaccinated, we're going to all get better. And I'm okay with people having never experienced it and how lucky they are to say it was just a flu. Good for them for not having to have this experience.
What gives you hope?
My family gives me hope. Our new president gives me hope. I love our governor. I think the state of Colorado is doing really well. It gives me hope when I go in the grocery store and I see everyone wearing a mask. Everybody's celebrating getting the vaccine online and I make sure to comment on each one. Yay, you know, those are the things that give me hope. I really want to be better. I think staying positive about it, that's what's going to help me get better. And time.
Next, I spoke with Cedar Cachette, who is an artist living in Paonia. When did you first contract COVID?
I'm not exactly sure because I had symptoms, but I ignored them for a few days. So it was around the end of April of 2020.
Very early on.
Yeah. And I was talking to my doctor using telemed because at that point we already were using safe measures. The doctors had really good pandemic etiquette. She said that there was a lot of pertussis going around because people weren't vaccinating their kids. And she thought I had pertussis, so she prescribed an antibiotic for me, which I took, and I only was just getting worse. After the course of the antibiotic, I had to go see her, and I got a test. And it was really freaky. You had to go in the back door of the clinic, and everybody was dressed in their hazmat suits. The nurse took the test, and then they called me in to give me the results. And this is what my doctor said after, and the nurse said independently of one another, "Your test is negative. These tests have a 40 to 60% false negative rate." And then they took a breath. So I thought, well, if this was anything else, I would think, well, they're inferring that the test is incorrect. And then I started to get really worse.
Sorry, when you say you were getting a lot worse, what were your symptoms?
At first I had a dry cough, but then it turned into a rattling cough. And I started to have shortness of breath. It was especially worse at night. It was really weird. Intermittent hives. They would just start behind my knees and work their way up to my neck. Within like 3 or 4 hours, they would just like crawl up. And I had chills, muscle pains, sore throat. I know I had occasional chest pain. I thought I was having a heart attack. My joints hurt. I had intermittent headaches, a lot of nausea. The worst was exhaustion. It got to the point where I couldn't get up. I had a lot of dizziness. So that was part of the exhaustion too, that I was just so dizzy. And I had intermittent bloody noses, which would be great. I'd be laying there having all these symptoms at once, thinking, oh my God, am I getting old? What's wrong with me? Then I had mucus coming out that was bloody and yellow. And I thought, oh crap, that's not good. And so I knew right away when I started coughing and the doctor said, just stay at home, and that I needed to elevate when I was sleeping on pillows. So I did. One of my friends from, I'm retired search and rescue. So one of my friends who's from search and rescue, who is also EMT, would stop by a couple times a week and take my vitals. And then another friend lent me a fingertip oxygen saturation little meter, and it also tells your heart rate. And I realized my oxygen saturation, which normally was fairly consistent at 98% ever since I've gone to the doctors, and I used to be an athlete, so I would take that as part of my training. It went down to 94. 93. And my EMT friend said to me, you need to go to the clinic now. So I was like, and I called and they said, get in here. And I went to the one in Paonia and she sent me to the hospital where they did a chest x-ray. And my doctor had already prescribed an rescue inhaler for me. So I started using that. I was in bed for about 25 days. Now, this wasn't laying down the whole time, but for 2 weeks solid I was. And then during the nights, I'd have a mild fever, but I just felt so bad I couldn't get out of bed to take it.
And beyond the chest x-ray, what did the doctors do for you?
They had to wait till I was feeling good enough to go in for other tests. So I had to get an EKG, a sonogram of my heart. I had to have a lung function test. And it turned out I have what's called air trapping in my lungs because that's a sign of COPD. Then I went for the pulmonary lung function test, which showed that I didn't have COPD, which I didn't think I did, because before I was like really healthy. There was nothing wrong with me. I didn't have allergies. I was never tired. I was like really hyper. My headaches weren't going away, and I was having problems breathing, and my heart was palpitating. And then I noticed, probably after about 6 months of having all these symptoms and not being able to do very much, that I couldn't hear as well. And so I started doing self-tests and I ended up going to the ENT who said that I have a viral damage of my cochlea. I had to go through a bunch of tests over several months. And that was, I started going to the doctor for that in February because I had to go to Junction. I was not going to go when things were so hot from December and January. So I just waited because I figured that who wants to get it a second time?
Right. And that's very common that people are delaying healthcare because they don't want to walk into a clinic where somebody's positive.
Definitely.
Looking at the timeline, we're now 6 months beyond your diagnosis.
I got tested multiple times and I've tested negative to the live COVID test. And they give me the same line. The tests aren't accurate because this was in 2020. And they also explained to me the life cycle of the virus, that you could be positive and test positive on Monday and go in on Wednesday and test negative, go in on Friday and test positive because of the cycle of the way the virus replicates, and that there's times when your body is sloughing and there's times when it's the virus is active. And then my primary care physician did not want me to get an antibody test because my insurance wouldn't pay for it.
And where do you stand now with your health?
I'm 2 weeks out of my second vaccination, and I really believe that that vaccination has helped me feel better after the initial reactions that you would have, which for me were nothing. It was exhaustion, headache, body ache, slight fever. That's no big deal. I've been better. My exhaustion has abated. My sore muscles and joint aches are almost all gone except for my neck. And my lung congestion and coughing is reduced. And sometimes it's abated.
Is it the kind of thing where you didn't realize how bad you were feeling until now when you feel better?
Well, I'm kind of aware of my body. I knew I was feeling bad because my entire life before that, I felt good. I was paying attention because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't getting worse because I didn't want what happened where they said, go to the hospital now to happen again.
When you were in the throes of this for 9 months, did you have doctors dismiss your symptoms or dismiss your experience?
I was fortunate. My doctor was pretty sympathetic, but I would go to him armed with facts. I grew up and married into a family of doctors, so I'm used to science speak. So I would go in there and say to him, I'm not in pulmonary distress, but I'm really close, versus saying, I can't breathe. And I would explain to him what I was doing and explain to him my symptoms. So I just approached him with a no bullshit attitude.
And you were able to speak intelligently about your symptoms.
Right, and forcefully. I think that he was frustrated that he wasn't really up on it because it's a new disease. He expressed that to me. This is so new, we don't know what to expect, but we're treating your symptoms. And I said, that's all I want right now. They gave me a rescue inhaler, which I did not like to use. It just didn't make me feel good. They gave me allergy pills, which I had the opposite reaction. And I don't know if it was COVID related or just me. They're supposed to make you drowsy and I get hyper and not sleep. But it didn't really make any difference. So I just stopped taking everything. And then I started using my own medicine. I had mullein tincture and I was taking motherwort and hops because I was very anxious, feeling like you're having a heart attack and that you're drowning when you're like, wake up at 2 a.m. feeling like you're drowning. And it's because you can't breathe. My friends also made me some respiratory tea. And I would say that everything kind of worked, but there's not much they can do if your cochlea are damaged. And there's not much they can do if you have a heart murmur. And if you have asthma, there's not much you can do. I really feel that my biggest aid in healing is my positive attitude. And I'm very ambitious and competitive with myself. And so my doctor said he didn't want me to stop exercising unless I felt really bad. I didn't eat any dairy, which causes congestion.
During this time, did you connect with other COVID long haulers?
Yes, I joined 2 Facebook groups, and I found that the symptoms I was experiencing were pretty much consistent with every other person. And it really made me feel better because those other people on Facebook were so much worse. Like my hair fell out, not all of it, but I still have patches that are bald. And I thought, well, what the hell is that? And there were other people on there that took pictures of like half of their head bald and the other half their really lovely hair. And I thought, okay, don't complain about that.
In one survey of long haulers, 98 different symptoms were reported.
I'm not surprised. I know that the viruses just can affect everywhere in your body. And my first go around in college, I was science-based and one of my jobs was working at the university's electron scanning microscope. And I got to look at viruses and they look like the Mars lunar lander. They're not alive, but I know that they can get everywhere. There's nothing that they can't get through because every membrane is permeable for a virus.
At this point, now that you're feeling a little better after the vaccine, do you have another appointment to discuss this with your doctor?
Yeah, I do. In the end of May, we're doing another checkup. He's really good about being encouraging, and I really appreciate his candor at expressing his own personal frustration in not being able to make me feel better. I think that even though we're here in a rural community where the doctors come and go, I commend him for that. And he's worked together with me. I don't feel like I go in there and He's like, I'm the doctor, that's why. He's like, we're a team for your health. So I really appreciate that.
Do you want to add something that I haven't asked?
I just want to make sure that people know, as of today, our cases of COVID are going up in our state. So it's not over. I mean, if anybody has read any history, plagues aren't 1 year, aren't 2 year. They're generational. The minute you let your guard down, it will spread.
You are tuned in to Local Motion on KVNF Radio. I'm Kate Redmond. The National Institutes of Health has announced the first phase of its four-year, $1.15 billion initiative to learn more about why some COVID-19 survivors have long-term symptoms, even after the virus has left the body. The NIH is calling the condition post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2 infection, or PASC. Because COVID-19 testing during the early months of the pandemic last year was often limited to people hospitalized with severe respiratory problems, many long haulers with mild or moderate COVID-like symptoms, like Maggie, weren't tested. Others were tested relatively late in the course of their illness, which can increase the likelihood of false negatives. The NIH director, Dr. Francis Collins, stated that the hope is the insights gained from this research will also enhance our knowledge of the basic biology of how humans recover from infection and improve our understanding of other chronic post-viral syndromes and autoimmune diseases. My next interview is with Dr. Bill Cornwell, a cardiologist at UC Health, the University of Colorado Hospital, who provides care for patients at the hospital's post-COVID clinic. Is it your experience that patients with COVID who have long-term symptoms initially presented with mild symptoms?
Not necessarily. We are seeing the long hauler syndrome show up in people who've had any degree of severity of symptoms initially when suffering from the initial COVID illness.
Okay. What are some of the ways symptoms are treated in absence of a cure?
That's a good question. To be quite honest and frank, we don't have a good answer for that right now. There are anecdotal reports of people recovering after they've received the COVID vaccine. That's an issue that's been all over the news recently. That's a minority of patients. For the remainder of patients, to be quite honest, we're really not sure. We have some initial kind of anecdotal experience that exercise may be a very helpful way of helping patients get back on their feet, but we have a long way to go and a lot to learn about this long hauler syndrome before we have a definitive answer as to what exactly needs to be done to help them recover.
Can you describe the organs that are most affected and how, for instance, they're affected from months of fever?
It's probably not a single organ that is abnormal with long hauler syndrome, but rather a group of organs. And it looks like it probably results from deconditioning, meaning that, you know, when patients are having a COVID illness, they're less active than they once were. When you go down for 2 or 3 weeks trying to recover, your muscles get weak, your heart gets weak, your lungs aren't used to breathing as much oxygen as they once were. And then you recover from COVID and you try to get back up and do the things that you once did. You know, when you think about trying to exercise, you really are trying to mobilize, you know, you're breathing in air from the atmosphere and getting it all the way down into your legs that are exercising. There's a lot of organs that are involved with that. The lungs, the heart, the blood vessels, the muscles themselves.
I imagine that you have access to some of the finest studies nationwide and worldwide on this syndrome. Can you update our listeners on some of the latest findings?
To be honest, some of the most interesting data actually come from the patients themselves. There's been a lot of press recently about this whole issue of long hauler patients improving after they get the COVID vaccine. You know, that was not a large randomized study sponsored by the NIH or some biopharmaceutical company. That was really a grassroots effort by long hauler patients who just started talking to each other, and they started sharing stories that, you know, hey, I felt better. You know, I felt better. And, you know, what it looks like is that about 40% of long hauler patients improve after they get the COVID vaccine. I would say that is, at this point, hypothesis generating. And that's something that would need to be confirmed in a large clinical trial, you know, before we would definitively conclude that the COVID vaccine can be used to treat or cure the long hauler syndrome. As far as other data itself, we really are limited right now in April 2021. That's going to change very soon because there's a growing awareness of this disease. Now that we've gotten through the initial phases of COVID itself, there are groups around the country, the American College of Cardiology, for example, the American Heart Association, for example, are very interested in trying to better understand this. The NIH, all of these organizations are devoting lots of resources to very quickly, number one, try to understand what the problem is in the first place, which then leads to number two, potential treatment strategies for it.
One thing that I read is that women account for 72% of long haulers. Does this make any sense?
A lot of these data, they're not large scale, formal observational trials or studies. They are grassroots experiences, anecdotal reports. In some circumstances, it could very well be that the majority are women. In other circumstances, it may not be. That's just an area that we really have a lot to learn about whether or not women are disproportionately affected by this disease. I can tell you in my own experience, I have seen both women and men. I've seen young and old. It appears to be something that really will affect anyone that suffered from COVID. It looks like about 25 to 33% of people who've had COVID will go on to develop long hauler syndrome. It's across the age and gender spectrum.
Can you go into some of the cardiac symptoms associated with post-acute COVID?
One of the most obvious things that tips us off that a patient may have long hauler syndrome is when they go from sitting to standing, they immediately have this sensation of rapid heart beating or palpitations, just feeling like your heart's going to jump out of your chest. And then when they try to go to exercise, they just can't do it. They feel winded, they feel short of breath, they feel lightheaded and fatigued. I've had some patients who say they're trying to walk their dog. They made it about 5 minutes and had to stop. A couple people have had to make phone calls to have friends drive them back home. I've had mothers of four who can't take care of their kids anymore just because getting up from, you know, the chair to go walk around and take care of your kids, you know, that exhausts the heart and the lungs. I've had international business travelers who can't go back to work because just simple things like trying to get in a car to go to the airport to walk to the gate is just overwhelming for the heart and the lungs. It manifests in a lot of interesting ways, you know, if we just think about the cardiovascular system in itself.
I'm also curious about the neurological symptoms. Can you speak to that?
This goes back to the whole problem. We don't fully understand what the problem is in the first place. But there are some data to suggest that whether it's the virus itself that is infecting the nervous system or if it's a result of inflammation, you know, the body's response to an infection, the nervous system is being affected. That can lead to people feeling confused, fatigued. You've seen in the literature this quote unquote brain fog. Real world examples of that, college age kids, grad students who can't read textbooks anymore, they can't read scientific journals, and they've had to put their graduate experience on hold until they figure out a way to get through this quote unquote brain fog. So it's a real problem that unfortunately in April 2021, we just don't have the answer to yet. But as I said, there are an overwhelming amount of resources going in to try to understand this very quickly.
Is UC Health running a study?
Yes, on many levels, whether it's observational, meaning we're just trying to understand more about the syndrome itself, whether it's mechanistic, trying to understand, for example, why do we have the brain fog? From a cardiovascular standpoint, why is the heart have such a difficult time? From a pulmonary standpoint, why do people have such a hard time breathing? And then from a treatment standpoint, we're already looking into ways that we can try to help people feel better and get past this. So on many levels, we are engaging with local, regional, and national affiliate organizations to try to tackle this.
Have I missed anything that you would like to add?
You know, it's one thing to read about it online. It's a whole other thing to really understand that this is a very disabling disease. When you have young athletes who can't participate in their sport anymore, when you have moms and dads that can't take care of their kids, this long hauler syndrome is real and it's bad. It is like aging 30 years. I'm glad that our major organizations, again, like the American Heart Association, lung organizations, the National Institutes of Health, they're very rightly devoting resources to this because if we don't figure this out, this is going to be a major problem that is just not going to go away.
You've been listening to Local Motion. I'm Kate Redmond. Thank you for tuning in.